This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, splat the linguistic rat. Today, etymologies you requested. You sent in lots, thank you very much. This is just some, and if yours is not included, comfort yourself with one of these reasons. One, covered it before. Browse through theallusionist.org/lexicon to find the relevant episode. Two, some of the questions were big enough to require their own episode, so sit tight because I hope to be able to bring you such soon. Three, your questions were good, but either the dictionary or my brain couldn't supply a good answer. That's just how it goes sometimes. I must admit, I spent a bit too much of yesterday evening trying to figure out, per a request from Kate, whether the word seminal is sexist. What's my verdict? Listen on to find out. On with the show. To start, just a little bit of etymology. I couldn't squeeze into the last episode about zero, naught, which conveys both nothingness and the number zero. It's from Middle English, and it meant zero before English had zero, but it was a respelling of the Old English word nowit, meaning nothing. If you say ought to mean zero, which I believe is the American English option, well, that got all flipped around, because ought is from the Old English awit, which means everything. How did everything come to mean nothing? Well, it's all thanks to that old agent of chaos, Misdivision. Not content with making an apron an apron and a numpire an umpire, it turned a nought into an ought. Nought also had another meaning, which is retained a little bit in naughty. It meant something evil. So from there, let us head straight over to your requests that feel relevant to the Halloween season, which is apparently what the month of October is called now. Look, I didn't invent it, just reporting it. Brad says, conjure. How did it go from meaning swearing an oath together to make something appear from up your sleeve? Great question, Brad. Although I think it has only had the rabbit in the hat kind of meaning for a couple of hundred years. Stage magic had been around for a long time before that, but tended to be called other things, such as legerdemain, which was a French word meaning light of hand. Conjure has been around in English since the mid-13th century at least, and did mean to summon with magic, the same as the old French word it came from, conjure, which came from a Latin verb, conjurare, which, as Brad said, means to swear an oath together. The con is together, and the you part is from the Latin word jus, meaning law. That's the same root as jury, judge, justice. Conjurare also meant to pray, because swearing an oath was to a deity, so the concepts are not that far apart. But somewhere along the way, conjure got a little whiff of swearing an oath with a demon. Hey, guess what else has a swearing an oathy etymology? Exorcism. A word that appeared almost synonymously with conjuring a few hundred years ago when those words were both newish to English. They're both summoning spirits, the crucial difference between them being that exorcisms were considered legit because priests did them to summon and thus banish spirits, and also to study the spirits because gotta know your enemy, right? Whereas conjuring, well, that's not academic summoning of demons, that's just for nefarious purposes. Oh, but what if you were summoning spirits for non-demonic purposes? No, naughty. Remember, there was a long period in the English-using nations where Christian rituals, incantations and props, good, all others bad. Monotheism, good. Pantheism, bad. Although for much of human existence, magic and religion have bubbled away together in the same cauldron. Cauldron is from the Latin hot bath, by the way. As Christianity took hold across Europe, non-Christian practices had to be sequestered off as paganism, and then paganism had to be demonised, literally and figuratively, to keep people Christian. I'm not sure I'm really able to answer your question, Brad, about exactly when and why conjure underwent this transformation from oath-swearing to spirit-summoning and then to performing illusions. But maybe one way to stop people wanting to conjure spirits was to effectively defang the word by associating it with pulling a plastic bunch of flowers out of your sleeve. Relatedly, supernatural used to mean divine. Because who's above nature? God, of course, always lording it over everything. This request comes from Porter K. Ludwig, who wants to know about warlock, witch, wizard, or sorcerer, basically any of the terms related to magical dudes. A lot of media tends towards a witch being a female wizard, but that feels weird and reductive, I think. Well, compared to wizards, witches do take the lead at being executed for witchcraft, although not exclusively, and not in Iceland. I recently went to the Museum of Icelandic Sorcery and Witchcraft, where there is a list of the 21 people who had been executed for witchcraft in Iceland, and 20 of them are men. But while a lot of the witch executions in countries such as Britain were because of misogyny, what I gleaned at the museum is that in the Iceland of yore, women weren't getting executed because they didn't think that women were up to the task of witchcraft. Ugh, you're either executed for being a witch or not good enough to be a witch. Can't win. Or were Icelandic women just way better than the men at getting away with it? My favourite of the unfortunate male witches was Sigurður Jónsson, who, I quote, admitted, among other things, that he had fought a ghost and frightened it off with the help of herbs and his own semen. Look, officer, there's a perfectly innocent explanation for this. I was just cooking dinner and self-pleasuring when a ghost happened to appear, and I did my best with what I had to hand. Sometimes it'd be useful if a podcast had footnotes, wouldn't it? So that if you came here just for etymology, you didn't get derailed by a tale of someone frightening a ghost off with their own semen. Is seminal sexist? We'll get on to witches in a moment. Let's get the magic lads out of the way first. I covered Warlock in episode 28 of the show, Would Like to Meet Part 1. Warlock started out as the Old English Wa-loga, which meant a traitor or liar. Wa meant fidelity or vow, but the loga meant lie. So while wedlock was making a pledge, warlock was breaking a pledge. Wa-loga also used to sometimes refer to the devil. And by extension, it came to mean people who associated with the devil, and thus by the 1500s, it was a word for sorcerers. And it's now considered by some pagans to be an offensive term. And fair enough, just because you're a gentleman witch doesn't mean you're evil. Not all warlocks. Sorcerer started out as saucer, got an extra ER because that's magic. No, it's back formation from sorcery, which was a couple of hundred years older, been around since about 1300. And ultimately that came from a Latin word for fortune telling. So I don't think there's been such a journey for the word sorcerer. Whereas wizard arrived in English about 600 years ago, and it was a combination of wise and ard. You know, wise as in wise, because wizards were sages. And ard, which is the same suffix as in buzzard, drunkard, coward, bastard. It was kind of an insulting suffix, actually. It's not the same ard as in haggard. That word was from the Old French falcon haggard, meaning falcon of the woods. And haggard meant unruly, like a hawk. Buzzard was also from Old French buizard, an inferior hawk. Rude! But we're not here to redeem buzzards, we're here for wizards. The word became magical in the mid-16th century because wisdom is magic, or rather because for much of human history, philosophy, religion, magic, science, occult didn't have so much distance between them. If you go far enough back, maybe 2,500 years ago, to the Greek origin of the word magic, magos, it meant a learned person or priest. That's often the same person at the time. But magoi was the word Greeks used to refer to Persian priests, and it wasn't intended to be respectful. It was meant to imply that the magoi beliefs were outside of the realm of what was acceptable in Greece. But then, when the Roman Empire got hold of the word, they were using it against Greek and Roman peasants. Whatever they were worshipping was not appropriate, and just to amp that up, not only was it not appropriate, it was highly deviant and deceitful and evil. So there's that theme again. Magic was separated off from certain religious structures and then marginalised and vilified as much as they could manage. The etymologies show how these concepts are rooted together and then they sprout off into different directions. You'll notice that these ancient Greek and Latin words tended to refer to men, and I don't think it's coincidental that for a lot of time in a lot of societies, women didn't get much of a chance to flex religious or spiritual powers or get the credit for having capacity for such. Not capable of scaring off a ghost with semen. So let's look at the word witch. It is from the Old English word witch, spelt W-I-C-C-E, and the masculine form was W-I-C-C-A. Yes, like the modern religion Wicca, which was named that mid-20th century, but Witcher, as it was pronounced apparently in Old English times, meant a wizard. The wick that appears later in the adjective wicked. Craft in the word witchcraft at the time meant a strength as well as a skill. So witchcraft was powerful as well as involving practical abilities like herbalism. Along with the word witchcraft, Old English had the word drycraft. A dry was a priest or magician from the same word and the same principle as druid. After the French had taken control of England, drycraft was supplanted by magique, but witchcraft remained, presumably to keep a specific bias against whatever the lady witches were up to. There were quite a lot of Old English words for witches, and they all meant slightly different things, like the witches had compartmentalised skills then, not like the all-rounder witches later. So they had Yaldrich, women who cast spells and incants, Sinlich, a shapeshifter or one who communes with phantoms, and then Libestre and Liblaka. The lib in those was from the word for leaf, so those witches were making potions. Or just brewing tea. Not all leaf water is a threat to society, come on. Crone, however, is a witchy word nowadays, but only has been that for the last few decades. For the several hundred years prior to that, it was just an insult for an old woman. It was from a French slang word, charron, meaning old sheep, but literally a dead body. The same origins as the word carrion. Meredith wants to know about the hedge in Hedgewitch. So there's some explanations floating about. One is because hedge witches were solitary witches working a lot with herbs. They lived outside the village, that is, beyond the hedge, and, or, they gathered ingredients from hedges and woods. But I think a factor to consider is that whereas nowadays we would understand a hedge to be a barrier made out of living shrubs or trees, in Old English, a hedge meant a barrier of any kind or a fence. So I think the term is likely less to do with where the hedge witches obtain ingredients and more to do with their separation from other people, although the modern city-living hedge witch may have changed the paradigm. There are some Old English and Old Norse words for sorceress or witch that translate to hedge rider. The Old English word was hagtess. We've got the word hag from it as a souvenir. Oh, thanks. Oh, you shouldn't have. But the hedge rider words referred to witches and ghosts. And I think they're playing with that image that these beings were existing in two worlds, the so-called civilized one and the wild supernatural one beyond the hedge. So perhaps the hedge in Hedgewitch is just the metaphorical hedges we met along the way. Lola says, and what about Excelsior? How did wood shavings get such a fancy name? I never knew about the wood shavings. You people teach me so much. Okay, this is not technically a magic wand, but Excelsior sounds quite magical. It's an exciting name for substance that is more boringly called wood wool or wood flour. It has many uses, such as upholstery, erosion control mats, archery backstops, fake drawing gift baskets. My family has a teddy bear that's more than 100 years old that belonged to my grandfather, and it's still holding up, stuffed with Excelsior. It also used to be used as absorbent material in late 19th century nappies and wound dressings and early disposable menstrual products. But why does this substance have such a grandstanding name, from Latin meaning higher? Unfortunately, the answer is as clear as wood wool. The word was around before it was a wood wool word, but in that form, it first appears in patent applications in the 1860s for mattresses stuffed with a substance with the commercial name Excelsior. So some enterprising wood mincer decided to give it that name as their brand, perhaps inspired by the motto of New York State since 1778, or just marketing. Boring substance, exciting name, reach for the stars, stuff your mattress, absorb your blood, stop the jars of chutney crashing into each other in a gift hamper, Excelsior! On to the non-witchy part of the programming. Sarah says, gaff. That is all Sarah says, just the word gaff, G-A-F-F-E. So I take that to mean, what is the origin of the word gaff, like when a public figure makes a big blunder? Not the origin of gaff without an E, that in Britain means your home, but further back in 18th, 19th century was slang for a music hall or theatre or funfair, which might have come from the Romany word gav, meaning a town. The other kind of gaff, the foot-in-mouth gaff, that is from a 600-year-old French word meaning a fish hook. A fish hook? My research was the last coy about why a fishhook would come to mean something facepalm-inducing. It's as welcome as a fishhook to the mouth. It causes one to recoil as if the mouth had been caught by a fishhook. Gaffs also sometimes meant objects, such as a spur that you use when riding a horse, so perhaps a gaff is just something that hurts. Or maybe it is from the English and Scots words gaff, meaning loud talk, and etymologists just got confused, reeled in by a passing fishhook. Tony says, the names Javier and Harvey, they sound very similar, but is this just a coincidence? Yes, Tony, Zaltzman's long-awaited second law of etymology. Don't get too comfortable if something sounds like another word or is spelled like another word. Harvey is an old French name, at least 1,000 years old, meaning battle-worthy. Javier is from the 16th century Roman Catholic missionary Francis Javier, spelt with a Basque X rather than the Spanish J. He's the patron saint of a lot of places around the world, from Mumbai to Indianapolis, but also patron saint of plagues, so pop him a prayer if you're so inclined. His name refers to the town in northern Spain where he was born, Javier, and that derives from the Basque term Echeberri, meaning new home. There are equivalents in other languages, like Casanova in Italian, or just new house in English. Jerry says, clove. How can it be a spice and a section of a head of garlic? Let this comfort you, Jerry. It's really two different words. Zaltzman's second law again. The one that is the spice is from Latin clavus, meaning nail, because the cloves look like nails. Metal nails, not fingernails. The garlic clove is from the Old English clufu, which derived from a word meaning something that cleaved or clove apart like the pieces of a head of garlic. The old spear leak. Rosalie says, nice. It often seems so loaded when people call you nice. I do try to be nice, but I say I'm being kind, because nice is like I'm putting out my own doormat for you to downtrod me under. What's going on? What's wrong with nice? When did all that start? Well, Rosalie, nice started out as not nice. It meant ignorant or clumsy. And I just learned that clumsy meant to be benumbed by cold when it started out 400-ish years ago. Which figures, as we learn about getting toasty. English got nice from a Latin word, nescius, which meant not knowing. Ne, the negative prefix, and the verb scire, to know, the same verb that begat science. There's still an English word, nescience, which means ignorance or lack of knowledge. So that's where nice began, in the 1300s, and then it went on the move. In the 1400s, it started to mean fussy or fastidious. Not sure why, and maybe that was an indicator of silliness to be fussing over something. From there, it came to mean dainty, delicate, scrupulous, well-dressed. Oh, what a turnaround. Nice became a complimentary adjective, and this is why we can believe in redemption, people. If it can happen to nice, maybe any of us can turn ourselves around, go from ignorant to pleasant, kind and thoughtful, just like nice. So where, how did it go wrong for nice again? Well, it was a victim of its own success. It was used for people so pleasant, so refined, so unvulgar, that nice became a bit insipid. 200 years ago, Jane Austen's characters were mocking people who overused the word. In 1946, nice guys finish last was supposedly coined by Leo DeRouche, manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, who said something like it about their rival baseball team, the New York Giants, who were losing, but nice guys was the polite way to refer to the enemies publicly. So he wasn't saying that they were losing because they were nice, but that is what the phrase soon came to mean as it was propelled through the gender relations of the 1950s and beyond. Nice guys, not macho enough. Nice guys, not compelling to women. Then also a strain of nice guys who are nice to get what they want, which is too manipulative to be nice, but try telling them that, they will pop off. Meanwhile, nice girls equals prudes. Nice time equals unexceptional. That's where I think it all went wrong for nice, Rosalie. But I think nice can be redeemed again. It's hard to shake a reputation for blandness, but there's got to be room for things that are pleasant and so easy to digest that they don't inspire more exciting adjectives, right? Give nice another chance. And then it'll turn bad again. That's the cycle. And remember, we can't have nice things. Is seminal sexist? Kate asked. Seminal and semen are both from the Latin word for seed, as is the word seminary, which originally meant a plant nursery. So you could argue there's a Latin word that went up several separate paths, and that semen and seminal have nothing more to do with each other than that. But then, would the word seminal mean something so important if some people weren't so proud of their bodily emissions and the same demographic hadn't called dibs on the lexicon? Is seminal sexist? I'm sorry to hedge a bit, and I don't want to play into the hands of people who are always complaining, you can't say anything anymore! Political correctness gone mad! So, instead, I'll say, you don't have to use this word anymore. Something like landmark or foundational would work perfectly fine instead. No bodily fluids there. The Illusionist is an independent podcast made by me and by you because you supplied your questions and ear time and Patreon patronage. I was recently on the show podcast playlist from the CBC recommending a few other podcasts I like, so check that out if you're in the mood for more speech-based audio in your life. And sign up to Patreonize this show at patreon.com/illusionist for extra behind-the-scenes info about the show, additional things I learned in Iceland as well as the ghost semen thing, and bonus word facts. Speaking of, fact used to mean evil deed about 500 years ago. That's a thematically relevant bonus etymology for you all. Ooh, and another, grimoire, as in the spellbook, comes from the same word as grammar. As does glamour, which used to mean an enchantment. Oh, this etymology train never pulls into the depot. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is popple. Chiefly archaic, verb, of water, flow in a tumbling or rippling way. Noun, a rolling or rippling of water. Try using popple in an email today. This episode was written and produced by me with questions from you, thank you very much, and music by Martin Austwick of palebirdmusic.com. Find Allusionist Show on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, and to hear or read every episode, find more information about the topics therein, see the full dictionary entries for the randomly selected words, browse the lexicon of all the words ever covered in the podcast, visit the show's forever home, theallusionist.org.